Did you stay on campus or go back to Anchorage during the summer?
No, I stayed here at the campus. We were all working out there, and so I stayed there in the dorm. The girls stayed in the girls' dorm, of course, the boys in the boys' dorm. And we just used about half of the dorm at that time. And we all ate down in the, what would be a commons, I guess you'd call it, but in the basement of the girls' dorm, they had the cafeteria. So we all ate down there together, and it wasn't full by any means. And the food was pretty good, although we had radish tops for greens, and they were terrible. I've never eaten them since, and I don't intend to. They're prickly going down.
Were they pretty well cooked?
Oh, yes, they were cooked all right, but for some reason, they were still prickly. They didn't soften up a bit.
When you were on campus, were you taking classes, or did you have a job?
No, I was working there. I was secretary to Dr. George Gasser. He was the experiment station manager. No, couldn't be manager. He was a superintendent of the experiment station. Mm-hmm. So I had a job there year-round. It didn't pay very much, but it took care of the room and board and a few extras.
Mm-hmm. And then what about holidays? Christmas, did you stay in Fairbanks, or did you sometimes go home?
No, well, I was only here for 2 years, so the first Christmas I stayed here. I was too broke to go anywhere. And the next Christmas, nine of us chartered Harold Gillum's plane, one of his planes, and we went down to Anchorage. It was a three-hour trip at that time, and it was my first airplane ride, so it was a novelty to me, and the windows all frosted up because it was so cold. And the boys got the razor blades out of their luggage. We kept scraping the windows, hoping to see something, but we never did get the windows clear enough so we could see. But we got into Anchorage fine, and I didn't know where my folks lived because they'd moved since I was there, and of course I didn't let them know I was coming. But one of the boys knew where my folks were living, so he took me over there, and I surprised them.
So did you have a little easier time of it flying back?
No, we didn't get to fly back. Gillum had gone on over to Cordova, and he got weathered in over there, so he gave us back our money for our train ride back home. So we came up by train and got there in time for school all right.
Earlier we were talking about some of your classmates. What about some of your professors? For instance, Lola Tilly, did you ever have a class from her?
Oh, yes. I took a home ec class from her and learned how to bake bread, and I'm still baking bread after all these years. And one day my granddaughter came home from school, and she said, she was very indignant. She said, "Grandma, did you ever have Mrs. Tilly for your teacher?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "Well, she had to tell the whole class that she had my grandmother in school." I don't know why she was so indignant. Lola Tilly should have been indignant.
Wow, teaching the third generation.
Yes. Well, not the third, because the second generation were all boys.
Yeah, right. They wouldn't have taken home.
No. They needed it.
She was retired from the university by the time they were students.
I think so.
1960. Mm-hmm. But I do remember her substitute teaching in the school.
Yes, in the high school.
So you were at the university for 2 years, and mm-hmm. is that where you met your husband?
Yes, he was a student there when I met him. And then he went to work in the power plant.
Oh, the
University
power plant. Mm-hmm. Power plant. So did you live on campus at that time?
Well, after we were married, yes. Mm-hmm. And we had a little house there. It was colder than the Dickens, but we managed. Had to keep the furnace going.
Yeah, I guess that was pretty much a round-the-clock job on cold days.
Well, yes, although we didn't think much of it. It was just one of the things that had to be done, and took it in our stride.
That's what I saw. I think that was the one that was demolished in 1967 or 68. I can remember mm-hmm. a small power plant.
Well, I think that's where it was. We had campus was so changed, but I can't tell you now just where it was, but I think that was the area that it was. We had a little house there on the campus, and of course because we were students and then staff, the teachers had nothing to do with us. professor next door to us never spoke to us. And of course now it's much, much more relaxed, but at that time the professors kept among themselves and didn't have anything to do with the students except to teach them. There were a few teachers that were nice and sociable, but the one next door to us wasn't.
Not your friendly neighbor.
No.
Oh, so the campus power plant job came with housing,
mm-hmm, because yes.
It was considered a strategic job in terms of
you're more or less on call 24 call. Hours a day. Yes, my husband worked swing shift, which kept us from socializing with anybody, really.
Swing shift, that would mean working so many hours and then having so many off, and then...
Well, no, four to 12. There'd be a day shift and a swing shift and a graveyard shift, they called it.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought he was very fortunate to be able to have the swing shift, but there wasn't much that we could do with the rest of the students or anybody, any of our friends, because anything that they did, any activity, was practically
his
over
working
with
hours.
Mm-hmm. But that was all right. We managed. We entertained ourselves, and he had a car by then, so we could, in the summertime, we'd go places, and we could go shopping. And that was another reason I kept making bread. It cost 25 cents for every package to come out on the bus, so it was just much cheaper to bake the bread than to have it come out every once in a while.
Plus, there's nothing like that wonderful smell.
No, that's right, it is.
I think that is almost as good as the actual product. So how long did you live on campus then for?
We were married in December 37, and we left there in January 41. So just a couple of years,
mm-hmm.
3 years, I guess. And then we bought into the Fairbanks Laundry and moved to town. And we had a little house, a little log cabin. We couldn't keep warm in that, so we fixed up a garage that was in the building there and made that into living quarters. And it was compact, but that was all right. We had our oldest boy was a year old when we moved to town, so we managed fine with the three of us in that garage. We had a cooking area and a sleeping area, and that's about it.
Being warm, that's the bottom line.
Oh, yes. Well, I had my plants up behind the stove, and they froze. And it just...
How cold it was.
Yes, it was. The weather wasn't that cold, really, but it wasn't a warm winter either, but it was rather chilly, and we just got that going, that other place fixed up so we could live in it.
So this is practically back in your original neighborhood.
Well, this was down at the corner of 3rd and Lacey.
So two or three blocks.
Mm-hmm. Five blocks.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Of course, when we lived up there on 8th and Lacey, we had the Herring family just kitty-cornered from us. They lived there between 7th and 8th and between Noble and Lacey. And Walter was in my class. He's the one that was lost at sea during the war. And
Herring Auditorium, I think,
mm-hmm,
was named,
it's
after,
named
him.
After him.
Now, this would be, there are two Herring families. There's Patricia Rogge Herring family, and then there's Dorothy Beislein.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But they're two separate families.
Yeah, their fathers were cousins.
Mm-hmm. So which ones were your neighbors then?
Pat.
The large family.
Pat and Agnes and Walter and Tom and Betty and Arthur and Don. Those were the ones I knew. Mm-hmm. Then there were the older ones were gone by then, Muriel and I believe George was the other one. Mm-hmm. But Walter was in my class, and then Tom came out to, while we were living in Seattle, he came out there. He had TB, and he was in a sanitarium one winter, and so he fell back in school, so he was in with the kids that I went to school with then. But
So it felt like coming home then.
Oh, yes.
Moving down to downtown Fairbanks.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, and then after we got into the laundry, we were just too busy. At first, I wasn't doing too much with the laundry, and then I gradually got doing some of the book work. And then the next, let's see, we moved to town in January 41, and then August, our second boy was born. And then in December, the war broke out, and it was sort of turned everything topsy-turvy.
What immediate impact did it have on Fairbanks?
Well, it just turned the town into a dither, really, because we didn't know what to do. Of course, to begin with, they had started Ladd Field out there, and I don't recall when that started, but by the fall of 39, they were doing quite a bit of construction out there. And our oldest boy was born in December of 39. And we were still out on campus then. And then when we moved to town, we were in the laundry. And we were the only steam laundry in town then. So, of course, we were busy as can be. And then when the war broke out, we got even more so. And I left in April, I believe it was, and went to the States with the two boys. And, of course, I got out there, and everybody said, what are you coming out here for? You're better off up there. Well, everybody knew Alaska was going to be hit, but we didn't know when or how. Of course, everything coming in by steamship, we didn't know how much longer that was going to last.
So you were afraid of shortages as mm-hmm. well as vulnerability of, mm-hmm. of possible invasion.
Mm-hmm.
So did you stay out for most of the war, or just...
No, I came back as soon as I could get back. I came back in July, and awfully glad to get back. they can take their rationing and everything else, but I was just real glad to get back. And, of course, then we were so short of help that I pitched in and did everything that I could for a dollar an hour. Big pay. And...
Well, did quite a few people leave Fairbanks?
Yes, yes.
Women and dependents. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, a lot of the women and families left because, well, they all felt the same as, everybody felt the same. We didn't know when or where, but we knew that Alaska would be attacked. And it just was a matter of time.
And I guess the gold industry had shut down.
Oh, yes.
So, and that employed quite a few people in mm-hmm. the area, so I guess it really had an impact.
Well, it did, except that those people more or less were absorbed by the construction out at Ladd Field.
Oh, I see.
Which helped a lot. And, of course, some of the young fellows were being drafted and going off to war. And some were drafted and put right in their same jobs, but they were helping
with... Different uniform.
Yes. They were helping with the war effort. And my husband, because he had two children... I wasn't looked upon as being worthy of being in service, I guess. Well, not quite that way, but then when we were in the laundry, that was important enough that he was deferred because of the children, and he was in what they called a necessary business. So we ran the laundry and did a lot of work for Fort Wainwright. Or at Ladd Field.
I was going to ask if you did contract work for them.
Mm-hmm.
So you really had all the business you could handle.
And then some. And the equipment was old and breaking down. And, we had an awful time. And we couldn't get the help. We'd have men coming in. Of course, all of this construction up here was cost plus. So the more expense that they could have, the more money they'd make. And so some of the fellows would come in, they said, can't we do something? We're sitting out there in the bunkhouse, and there's nothing to do, and they're bored stiff. So we got some help that way. But then they'd get somebody would need them to go somewhere, so then they'd be gone, and there we were right back.
Back to square one.
Mm-hmm.
So you said you...
Babysitters.
Well, in those days, there weren't any as such... So babysitter was spelled M-O-M. The boys did real well. The older boy was very good about watching his younger brother, and he behaved himself real well They played on all around the block. They could go on the sidewalk all around that block, but they couldn't go any further. And they never stepped off the curb. They were real good about that. There was a woman down at the Federal Building who used to call me up every so often, tell me the boys were down there. I'd ask if they were on the sidewalk, and she'd say, oh, yes. And I said, well, that's fine, as long as they stay on the sidewalk. So they would go all the way around the block with their tricycle and their wagon, and they had a great time. Of course, they weren't too clean by the time afternoon came because they had no real place to play, especially a clean place. They played in the coal bunker, and that was really dirty, but it was clean dirt. And of course, everybody knew the boys, and they all watched out for them. And every night before they went to bed, they'd have a bath and clean clothes in the morning, but they played in the pool for 15 minutes or they're out. You'd think they never had a bath. And one woman who used to come downtown, she never got downtown until afternoon. She'd come in, and whether she ever realized that there were our children or not, I don't know, but she'd come in, she said, oh, those dirty little boys are out there again in the coal bin, and they are so dirty. And if she'd come down at 8 o'clock, she'd see that they were clean.
They got that way.
Yeah. But that was cleaner than some of the places they could have played, so we didn't object too much. But they had no other place to play except right downtown there. And there was a little native boy that lived in the back of the Burns Motel, and he used to come down and play with them. Like, he was dark-skinned anyway, so I didn't show up so much on him. But it's amazing how many people would watch our boys. And then they were also building the highway then and putting the phone line through. And some of the men came in, and they'd been out in the Tules for 6 months or so and hadn't seen anybody. And a couple of them sat right down in front of the building and just watched the kids. One fellow says, I never realized I missed my kids so much. But we had a lot of fun with them, and the boys were very good. But no, we didn't have any babysitters.
We had the downtown community watching out
for
them.
Yes,
yes. A nice
and the crew in the laundry were very good to watch. Mm-hmm. 1 year, our youngest boy, I guess, was 3 at that time. And nothing was said all morning long, and that afternoon after his nap, he came out and he was riding his tricycle around. He sang happy birthday to me. Oh, the crew felt so badly they'd forgotten his birthday. So the next day, boy, he had a birthday party. Nobody would forget. But, no, they took good care of him. They all watched him. Then, of course, during the war, they had to... So we had blackouts. We had to cover our windows, and we couldn't let any lights show. And that was terrible in the laundry because it got so hot in there that you need ventilation. And we did the best we could, and we got by, but oh my.
Blackout, so that would mean you'd have to cover up your windows at a certain time of day? Or
all the time.
All the time.
All the time, because you open the door with the light on inside. It shows up. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how a little bit of light will show. And
I didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm.
That it were blackouts out here.
Oh, yes. Yes, I don't recall how long, but it seemed like forever. But, you know, they had those little ventilators, and not so much anymore, but they used to have them in each room in the house. And we had to plug those up so that the lights wouldn't show through there. And no street lights. No headlights or anything. Of course, we weren't driving, so it didn't make any difference to us, but I wouldn't have wanted to drive around too much in the dark.
Well, I guess people in the wintertime didn't drive much during the war. It wasn't until afterwards that it became a year-round enterprise.
Well, and during the war, of course, we couldn't get cars, so it didn't bother too much.
So how did you do any delivery of laundry? Or
Yes, we had a delivery truck. And just deliver in the daylight. Do the best we could that way. But
so you'd have maybe a daily run out to Ladfield or...
No, they came in and picked it up.
Oh, so they provided their own.
yeah. transportation.
Yeah, there again. They.
Yeah, we're back on tape.
Okay, they had their own vehicles, and they came and picked up the laundry. And there would be blankets and sheets and pillow slips, and that was the main thing, towels.
Towels.
Mm. They furnished the bedding for the bunk houses out there. So, but we didn't have to deliver out there.
Imagine there were housing shortages, too, at that time.
Yes, as I say, we were pretty busy there in the laundry, so we didn't really know what was going on too much outside, but with the families gone, quite a few people turned their houses into more or less rooms and for the men to stay in.
Sort of a modern bed and breakfast,
yes.
almost.
Yeah, they had bunk houses, of course, out on Ladd Field, so that they had housing there, and a lot of the contractors had their own bunk houses too, and of course we had all of that laundry to do also. Mm-hmm. And it kept us really busy. In fact, many a time my husband didn't get to bed until midnight or later, and then up at 5 to start all over again. And it was really, it took a lot out of us, because it was a hard job, and the kids were real good. We only had the two boys then. And
did you ever take a day off? One day
no,
a week?
No.
Really? So you went pretty much full time?
Well, we didn't run the laundry on Sundays, but we were always out there doing something or other. And there was plenty to do.
Do you recall seeing many of the Russian pilots in town?
No, not I, but I know that they were in town. I went into Gordon's store one time, and I forgot now what I wanted, but I didn't have much time for shopping, and so I was in sort of a hurry, and some Russian aviators came in. Of course, they had all of the U.S. money that they could get, and they walked in, and the clerks all went over to them and took care of them, because they had money to spend, and they were just glad to sell them anything and everything that they had. So a lot of items were sold out. They bought lots of expensive items, perfumes and things like that for the girlfriends, and lots of lingerie and things like that, silk stockings, nylons.
So they helped create a little bit of a shortage.
Oh, yes.
You mentioned running out of some items. Did you have any type of rationing during the war?
Not as such. We had, if the stores had it, we were welcome to it, but sometimes they ran out of things. Like one time they ran out of salt, of all things, and you don't realize how important that is until you don't have it. But other than that, we're always used to buying in quantities and having a supply ahead, buying by the case and such, so we've managed pretty well. And of course, there's always moose and caribou, if worse comes to worse. But we may not have had, I'm sure that we didn't have all the fresh stuff that we should, because by that time, the airplanes weren't flying in so much. We depended upon the freight lines, the boat and railroad, to bring it in, or trucks from Valdez. But since then, of course, we've gotten a good supply by air. In fact, it's even the highway traffic is such that we can get it in pretty often. But of course, that time the highway wasn't even finished. It was finished, I think, in 46 or something like that.
Yeah, I think it was finished. It was built in 42, but probably not used commercially until later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would be strictly military for the duration of the war. I bet you remember the end of the war. What kind of a celebration did Fairbanks put on for that?
Well, let's see, I don't really remember. Well, I do some, because I walked downtown. By that time, my brother had been killed in England, and so it sort of hit me a little that he was gone then, and I thought, well, at least he wasn't saved, but he'll save some of the other boys. And there were quite a few boys from here that were lost, but it wasn't any different than anywhere else. Everybody lost people, and it's just one of those things that we can't all live through it. So it was quite a happy occasion for a lot of them, because nobody wanted the boys overseas or anywhere else. And we had a lot of boys up here that were away from home for the first time and pretty young to accept it. We had the USO, and they kept the boys as busy as they could down there. And the young girls were hostesses down there a lot. And several, quite a few of the local girls married them, and that's why they've left town. They're off somewhere else now. And I don't suppose it was much different than anywhere else, except this was quite a ways from home for a lot of them. And of course, my brother was over in England, which was quite a ways, but he took advantage of the postal system, and he wrote home quite often, and folks wrote to him, and he'd talk about things, and he'd say, well, he says, I'll tell you more about it when I get home. Well, he didn't get home, so we just have to think about how he enjoyed it over there, because he seemed to enjoy it, although flying was his cup of tea. He just loved to fly.
I guess a lot of young Alaskans got their introduction to airplanes right here in Fairbanks.
And oh, yes.
Many went on yes. to be flyers.
Well, a lot of the boys enjoy flying. It's with my brother, he really enjoyed it. And he was up here the weekend that Pearl Harbor was attacked. He came up in an open cockpit plane at 40 below, and oh, some of the things he used to do. He brought a boy up that was going with a girl up here, and he wanted the worst way to get up to see her. So my brother said, well, he'd fly her up, so he did.
This was coming from one of the
Anchorage.
Army camps in there.
No, they weren't, neither one was in the Army yet then.
Oh, so yeah. They were just civilians.
Mm-hmm. But they came up, and it was 40 below, and so when they got ready to go back, of course, all small planes were supposed to be grounded. Well, that didn't make much difference to my brother. So he couldn't taxi to the end of the field and then take off, because his airplane would cool down too much, the motor would cool down too much, so he just didn't taxi, he just took off. He got into Anchorage, and he could talk his way out of it, almost anything. He got down there, and of course they surrounded him with their guns and such, and they said, well, where have you been? Oh, he says, I've been in the interior. He said, didn't you know Pearl Harbor was attacked? Oh, he says, I can't believe that. And he talked himself out of it. So he got there all right, but you know, he caught up with him over in England.
By not being able to fly, was it for security reasons?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So if he had filed a flight plan, that wouldn't have mattered. It was still...
He shouldn't have filed a flight plan. If he had, why, they would have said, no, you're not going.
So the plane would have been stuck up here
mm-hmm.
for the duration.
Well, probably not that long, but for a while anyway.
Mm-hmm. But it didn't suit his timetable.
No, not him. No, he just loved to fly, and he joined the Canadian Army, so he has the English wings, and he also has the American wings. After he got over in England, the 8th Airport, 8th something rather, and it was part of the Army, but it was a forerunner of the Air Force.
Mm-hmm. RC, Royal Canadian Air Force?
Well, RCA, Royal Canadian Air Force, and he went over there, and I think he was with them about 9 months, and then they sent our Air Force over, and so he joined them.
Mm-hmm.
So he was in there about, well, I guess about another 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a brown alert, which means that They could fly, but they couldn't use any lights. And his plane collided with another one. So that was, that took care of him, but he enjoyed flying, and that's really what he wanted to do. Yeah.
What was his, your brother's name?
Floyd.
Floyd.
He was a disappointment to my dad because my dad wanted him to study and get a college education, but his head was in the clouds. And
Hart was in Alaska.
Oh, yes, definitely. Yes, I was looking through some things the other day and ran across some articles that had been written about him. And I guess he was quite a novelty. He was quite a character.
Well, I guess after the war, you hoped things would get pretty much back to normal.
Yes, we did. But they didn't. All kinds of things happened. And we had a bad fire down at the co-op area, and everybody thought the whole block would go. But Mrs. Ford had a firewall between her building and the co-op, and that stopped the fire there so that it didn't go any further. But it could have gone all the way down and taken everything. But it did pretty well to take the co-op building. That was completely gone. And everybody, of course, in those days went down and helped to fight the fire. The men came back. My husband came back and ruined a fur hat, but that was the least of the worries.
Was it pretty cold that night?
Oh, yes, very cold. And ice on the wires and everything. It was real sad situation. And but they built up later on, a little more secure. Good thing Mrs. Ford had that firewall there, though.
Yeah, I guess some of the previous fires took out the whole business section.
Yes.
Were some of the buildings, I guess the ones that burned, were still frame?
Yes.
But by that time, the co-op building was the first concrete building, what we call now the co-op.
Yeah, the Empress Theater.
Empress Theater, mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes, that was a concrete building, and so that stopped it on that side. And this firewall Mrs. Ford had,
that was at the other end.
Mm-hmm. There by Avakov's. Of course, mm-hmm. Avakov is long gone now, but there's a jewelry store there now, and she had a firewall on that side, which nobody seemed to remember.
So what businesses were lost in that particular fire?
Well, see, I don't recall now, but the co-op, I know. And seems to me there was another one in there.
So the co-op was a grocery store?
That was, it's hard to say like it is now, but it isn't that way now. They had a soda fountain in there, and it was a drugstore. Mm-hmm. And
so it was right next door to the Empress Theater,
yes.
Which we later called the co-op.
Yes.
I guess that's why I got confused.
Yes.
They were two separate buildings.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, that was a bad fire because it was a real busy business down there.
That's and a hard time of the year to fight fires.
Oh, yes. The fire in the wintertime was terrible. The NC used to toot the whistles to let us know what area it was in, and we all used to stop and listen every time that we heard the whistle because if it was in our area, we hurried home.
Make sure it wasn't you.
Mm-hmm.
So there'd be two blasts for one section and maybe three for another, mm-hmm. and everybody.
And a long and a couple shorts, and I've forgotten now just what all, but they had it so that we didn't know what area it was. But it was always a bad thing to hear that fire whistle go.
Happened all too often.
Oh, yes. Well, we had a couple bad fires in the laundry, and nothing that put us out of business, but slowed us down a few times, a couple times. And fire is bad up here, especially in the wintertime. It still is bad, but not as common as it used to be, thank goodness.
Mm-hmm.
They built up much better buildings.
Better buildings, mm-hmm. and better means of responding,
yes,
to fire. Yes,
well,
too.
And fire hydrants around closer, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And then we had one fire at Christmas Eve. That was a bad one.
That was the same year.
Yes. And that was when the telephone, well, I guess it was called a company. It was part of the NC, though. And that burned, and of course, that took care of our telephones for about 6 weeks. It was, being Christmas Eve, I watched from the front window. And the next morning, the kids said, "Oh, look, Mama, Santa Claus ate all your favorite candies." And I stood there and just eating as I was watching. Oh, poor kids.
That was not far from your place of business.
No. Well, by that time, we had built a new building down here, and that's why we moved it down this area. We bought a house across the street from the new laundry, and we built a new building and had mostly new equipment in there. And
this is right after, or that same year, or just before?
See, that was, we built that in the summer of 45 and moved into it in Thanksgiving time of 45. And so this was the next year in 46.
So this was the building that was on 3rd and 2nd and 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
And what you say is the present Big Ray's building?
Yes. Well, we didn't have it. We didn't burn, the laundry didn't burn down, but we had a couple fires there.
But, I mean, that was your location.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
You were there when the fire of 1946?
No, we were down here then because November 45, we moved into the new laundry building down here.
Oh, I see, a block away.
Mm-hmm.
Still and pretty close.
Yes, yes, it is. And but we moved the laundry down into the new building, and then one of our partners said, "Well, they'd like to come out and rent it." And we said, "Good, you can have it." So then my husband, well, then in fall of 46, we had another boy, and so I had quit working 6 weeks before he was born, and the other folks took over the laundry, and they were running it, and then we had a chance to sell out, so we got out. We'd had enough of it. My husband worked in, where did he work first? He worked for a friend that had I'll call it Pioneer Express, and he worked there for a while, and then he went to work for the railroad in the freight shed, and then he got into construction and worked various construction jobs, and then I didn't work then until our youngest boy was in the 8th grade, and then I went to work down at Northrop Drug, which is gone now.
Oh, that would be Mac Fenton?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, in the Northwood building.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that.
Oh, you do
probably
you?
Probably waited on me.
Well, I was a bookkeeper, so I was back in the woodwork. I might have, though, because every once in a while I'd go out and help them if something, they needed some extra help or something.
Were you working there the year of the flood?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
That was...
Yes, I had to go across, coming back home, I had to go across Dunkel at 4th Avenue because the water was so high. But I never believed that it could ever flood like that. I just never did. And the woman, the family that was living here, came running over to me and she said, "You ought to see this, the water's coming down 3rd Avenue." And I looked out my front door, I was living next door here then. And I said, "Gee, how can that be?" She said, "I don't know, but it's coming." And, well, it's just one of those things that you just can't believe. And we still had the house on 2nd, but had it rented out, so I went over to there to see how they were doing. And I just stood there. It was just like a movie, these people coming and going and carrying things. And I just couldn't believe what was going on, but there was water in the street there. And so our tenant was all right. He was a trooper. But later on, he went to work. Oh, that must be my husband.